Welcome to The Jump. I am Rachel Nichols alongside the Bash Brothers, NBA champion Richard Jefferson, NBA champion Kendrick Perkins. Guys, we brought you back today because you promised to play nice, but I don't know how that's going to work out.
But I just don't understand how, with all of the advances in technology, Perk can't figure out how to back up from the camera.
Maybe he doesn't want to, Richard.
No, but no.
Right, maybe.
What?
Maybe I'm just trying to spread some of this hair that I still have on my face and my head and put it and share it with you. Or maybe, how about this, RJ? You ever heard of the saying, when you're on time, you're probably late? You
wow.
ever heard of that? You ever heard
wow.
of that? How about that?
Yes, I have. And I'll keep my rebuttal to myself. I will keep it to myself.
Richard regularly walks into the studio with about 45 seconds to spare before
yes.
showtime.
But what they don't understand is that I'm here 45 minutes before, right? So it's just really for dramatic effect. That's the only reason why
Can
I do
you
it.
Say on television what you're doing for those 45 minutes? Because sometimes it's getting a sandwich and sometimes, Perk, I don't know.
It could be a salad. It could be numerous things, but we're on Disney, so we're not allowed to talk about that.
Producer Danny has a rule. Don't get fired on a Friday. You've put in the entire week of work. There's no reason to miss that check. So, boys, I will just say, you know.
Well, Perk is still here, so apparently the week is going all right.
Coming up, my friends, we will discuss how Rockets fans should feel today after dealing Victor Oladipo and James Harden in the same season. First, though. What's funny about the NBA trade deadline is that it is, at its backbone, paperwork. Building and unbuilding rosters on paper that teams can only hope will work in real life, moving numbers around on paper to make salary cap and balance sheet configurations work, all the while analyzing spreadsheets that plot out players' projected future production. And yet, for an event that is based in paperwork, sure brings out the wild side in the league's front office execs. Yesterday, we saw swashbuckling stare downs, daring leaps of faith, and in the end, a madcap sprint to the 3 p.m. deadline that brought a cascade of deals that moved 46 players between 23 of the NBA's 30 teams. In fact, there were more trades yesterday than there have been on any deadline day in the past 35 years, which is even more incredible when you consider that the biggest news coming out of the day was a trade that didn't happen. The Raptors had planned to move their heart and soul of the franchise for reasons so practical that even Kyle Lowry himself seemed at peace with the decision when he spoke at a post-game press conference the night before. And yet, even though the Raptors did get three of the NBA's top teams involved in a bidding war that could have significantly changed the balance of this playoffs, none of the deals they were ultimately offered were significant enough to convince team president Masai Ujiri to pull the trigger. Here was Masai last night explaining.
In the heat of the moment, you know, like, yeah, I was surprised, you know, like, because to be honest, you know, like, I viewed him, you know, like, as somebody that can go and put a stamp on what you're trying to do this year, you know, like, yeah. And the teams are selected. I know if he goes to those places, I know what that, I've lived it, I've seen it. I know what the guy does. I know who he is, you know. I hope I'm pardoned that if I valued him too much, you know, like, but hey, that's what I believe in today.
Now that was very warm. From a strictly cold and practical angle, though, there is an argument that even if the offers for Lowry were lower than Masai thought that they should be, they're more than nothing, and that while Kyle could re-sign with Toronto as a free agent this summer, or the Raptors could work out a sign and trade if he chooses elsewhere, there's just as good a chance that Kyle simply moves on and Toronto ends up with nothing. If that happens, he would be the fifth Raptors' key player in 2 years to leave the team with no assets coming back the other way. And yet, on a day like yesterday, cold and practical just wasn't where the Raptors were interested in when it came to perhaps the most beloved player in franchise history. And so instead, Kyle stayed a Raptor. The same cannot be said for Norm Powell, who has had a career season and will likely be looking for a serious salary package this coming summer. Ujiri moved him to Portland, a team looking to insert itself into the void that the banged-up Lakers are leaving in the West. Did the Blazers do enough to be real contenders? Or did the real level-up out West come from the Nuggets, who acquired Aaron Gordon and JaVale McGee? Out east, did the Bulls do enough to climb past the edges of playoff contention by picking up Nikola Vucevic? And what about the Heat? In the past few days, Miami managed to acquire Victor Oladipo, Trevor Ariza, Nemanja Bjelica, while giving up just one rotation player, no first-round picks, and still keeping cap flexibility for free agency this summer. No wonder Pat Riley looked so pleased when he met with the media last night, saying that come playoff time, quote, "I'd watch out for us." Oh, and then there's the Nets, who also managed to come out winners yesterday despite not making any trades. Thanks to the Sixers missing out on Lowry, Brooklyn remains the conference favorite. It was, all in all, a historically wild day that will have repercussions for years to come. Not bad for a bunch of paperwork. And guys, Caesars William Hill didn't update their odds until after we were off the air yesterday due to all the movement. Miami went from plus 1,400 to plus 1,200 after acquiring Oladipo. So they were the big mover. That puts them into the top four out east behind Brooklyn for the betting rights, Brooklyn, Milwaukee, and Philly. So, Perk, what do you think happens now in the East playoff race?
Well, we all know who's the big, who's the three-headed monster with Milwaukee, Philly, and the Nets, right? But the sleeper is going to be the Eastern Conference champions, and that's the Miami Heat. But I'm not sold on them just yet, and here's why. They lost Jay Crowder in the offseason, and yes, I understand they got Victor Oladipo yesterday in the draft, with the trade, but I don't know which Victor we're going to get. If it's the Victor from 3 years ago or 4 years ago when he took the Cleveland Cavaliers and LeBron James in 7 games, then watch out for the Heat. But if it's going to be the Victor of late, I just don't know. He hasn't been consistent. He hasn't really been healthy. He's been in and out of lineups for whether it was with the Rockets or the Pacers. So I want to see it live. It looks good on paper, but I want to see the action live and up close on the court.
No, Perk is 100% correct, and that's not something you're going to hear me say a lot over the next hour. Over the next hour, you're not going to hear me say that. But Miami has brought themselves back into the conversation because they were struggling, because they've had guys underperform and injuries and COVID, and all the things that come with that. But my biggest thing about the Miami Heat is, are you going to be able to beat two of those teams? And I just don't think that they can. If we're talking about them making a legitimate run to the finals again, then you're going to have to most likely beat the Brooklyn Nets and then the Philadelphia 76ers, or you're going to have to beat the Milwaukee Bucks and then the Brooklyn Nets. And I just don't see them beating two of those teams back to back to get to the NBA Finals.
Well, look, we didn't talk about the Milwaukee Bucks much yesterday because they didn't make a move yesterday, but we can't forget that they did acquire PJ Tucker earlier in the week. I think that did make them better. Mm-hmm. I am interested to see. Look, when we've seen the Heat and Sixers, for example, match up, Jimmy Butler has often been the wild card in that situation and made sure that his new team has beaten his old team, not every time, but often. And, we saw what they did to Milwaukee last year, but Milwaukee is better. And then Brooklyn is a whole new thing in the mix this year. So I think it is going to be scrappy in the East. And if you look at the West, we have updated odds for them, too. The Lakers, still the heavy betting favorites. I always want to make this clear. When Vegas does odds, it's about which teams they expect the most money coming in on. That's how the odds are calculated.
How much money they can take from everyone
Clippers,
else.
Exactly. Clippers are second, Jazz third.
Bet on the
and
Lakers.
The Nuggets jumped into the top four after their big trade. So, Richard, what do you think happens now in the West playoff race?
Woo! I don't know.
What was that noise?
The woo was like, okay, look, the Denver Nuggets got better. They added pieces that they lost in the offseason as far as like athletic players. So you lose Jeremy Grant, you gain Aaron Gordon, who I believe is better than Jeremy Grant. You lose Plumlee, and then you gain JaVale McGee. So they kind of saw that what they lost, they needed back.
Right.
So, okay, Utah's been the best team all year long. I think the Clippers, they probably got the one player that they needed. They got the point guard that they needed, and Rondo he's that guy. So I just don't really think that anything changes. If the Lakers are 100% healthy, which is an if, the Lakers are the best team, and there's no one's going to beat them. So I think this
in the West.
Yeah. So I think this arms race is really for, can we get there? And if the Lakers aren't 100%, can we overtake them? And I think there's a few teams that can.
Well, I have to disagree with you. Even if this Lakers team as constructed, if they're 100% healthy, they're not the best team in the Eastern Conference. I mean, in the Western Conference, RJ. When I'm looking at this team right now without Anthony Davis and LeBron James, have you been watching them lately? Like last night, listen, literally, they were shooting shots and they were hitting so hard off the glass, I started ducking. I started ducking from inside the living room of the hotel.
What would the Utah Jazz look like if you took away Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell? What would the Suns look like if you took off Chris Paul and Devin Booker?
And listen,
what would the Clippers
RJ,
look like if
RJ,
you didn't have Kawhi but, Leonard and Paul George? They would look like the Lakers are looking right now.
No, they wouldn't. And here's what I'm saying. Everybody else is getting better. You got the Portland Trailblazers, in my opinion, who got better yesterday. After watching them against the Miami Heat without even the addition of Norman Powell, looking at C.J. McCollum, how he's tearing it up, coming back off an injury, dropped 30 in the first half. We know what Dame Dolla is capable of. But then they add Norman Powell to the mix, a guy who's averaging 20 points a night on high field goal percent shooting, a big guard with tenacity, and he's a champion. He's coming in with that championship pedigree, and he's battle-tested. What I'm saying right now is that the others for the Lakers don't look that convincing to me no more. Like, Caldwell Pope is not playing well. Marcus Gasol is not playing well. We had, Taylor Horton Tucker, he's shown us flashes in a small sample size, but he hasn't been playing well. And you can't sit up here and tell me that the Lakers are a top five team right now in the Western Conference.
I said if the Lakers are 100% healthy. Now, who? When you're talking about 100% healthy, you're talking about Anthony Davis before his injury was probably one of the leading guys, Rudy Gobert, but top five in defensive player of the year. LeBron James was leading the race for MVP. You lose one of the number one rated defense. They had all – come on, Perk. I'm not saying that the guys have played well in their absence. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is you get LeBron James back, he makes people around him better.
Okay,
you get Anthony Davis back, he cleans up a lot of defensive mistakes on the other end. So they both make their teammates broadly better. I agree with you, though.
Well, I'm going to say this. You cool with Bron. I'm cool with Bron. You got his number. You call and ask him what's his level of concern right now after watching this Lakers team play without him. You ask him what's his level of concern. Because to me, the role players are not stepping up. And this is why I said yesterday that if I'm the Lakers front office, I am making that trade for Kyle Lowry. I don't care what I got to give up. Are you watching the games, RJ, or are you just coming on here talking about it? You can't be watching the same games I'm watching.
He's calling some of the games.
Thank you. I'm actually calling the games, Perk. Some of us work at nighttime. It's okay. But this is my thing, Perk. I agree.
He works in the morning. I just want to say.
I'm not saying, Perk, that they're playing great. But what we're saying is the addition of these two guys. The reason why Chris Paul was an MVP is when you put him on the team, everyone looks a lot better and a lot more organized. You put Bron on the court, they're going to look a lot better and a lot more organized.
So I'm going to give the two of you. I'm going to give the two of you a commercial break to figure this out. Producer Danny knows that, hey, we could just let this go. Oh, he tells me that we have a little segment during the commercial break. So look for that because they'll still be arguing about this. Also look for Dwight Howard because coming up, we will discuss how he received his first ring last night and then got ejected.
Dwight being Dwight.
Which was the more memorable moment. We'll discuss that. Welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols, still here with Richard Jefferson, Kendrick Perkins. I'm going to have my, referees wrestling shirt on in the next, I don't know. In honor of the trade deadline, though, it is time for us to play a round of something, nothing, or everything. Thank you. Producer Danny's playing along with me, even if you two aren't. Let's start with the Rockets, who traded Victor Oladipo to the Heat for Kelly Olynyk, Avery Bradley, and a pick swap in next year's draft. Now, remember, Oladipo was the key piece in the Harden deal since they decided not to just keep Caris LeVert. They could have had Jared Allen on their team. Instead, this is the direction they went. We will get to the Harden side of things shortly, though. So just the Oladipo side. Perk, is the Rockets trading Oladipo to the Heat something, nothing, or everything?
It's everything for the Miami Heat, and here's why. When you look at it, Oladipo, we all know that he wants to be in Miami, right? He wants to play for them. Well, he gets an audition, and Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra and everybody in that culture is going to hold him accountable. Now he gets the audition, and now he gets to be a part of the Eastern Conference champs, a team that went to the finals, and try to prevail them to winning the championship and show why he deserves a Miami Heat jersey in the future and a contract. So I think it's everything.
No, it's something. I'm not a big fan of auditioning, right? We've seen that go wrong. We saw that with Rondo in Dallas a few years ago. When you're auditioning, if he wants to be there, if he would have just played out the season in Houston, anywhere, and then he wanted to go someplace in free agency, then it's not an audition. Then the audition is a 3-4 year contract. So if all of a sudden he goes to Miami, and let's say it's not perfect, it actually could lower his value because that's one less team that's willing to pay for him. So look, Victor Oladipo is going to get plenty of money. He's going to get a big contract, but I'm not big on we're just going to audition you in a place that you want to be for 30 games and then judge you on the postseason.
Well, I mean, it wasn't necessarily his choice, right? Once he turned down that longer term deal, which is probably good for him in terms of his big picture career, that the Rockets were going to move him and they were going to kind of send him to wherever he got sent to. He was going to be a free agent this summer. So yes, he could have then gone to Miami then, but it's an audition really on the Heat side. Bobby Marks brought up a great point last night. Victor Oladipo's health has been a question. And when you are signing someone as a free agent, yes, you get to do a full medical after the deal is agreed to, but not before. And even that full medical is basically a physical and anything that you can, information you can acquire in one day. Well, this way, they're going to have 3 months, basically, with Victor off and on, seeing how his body weathers the regular NBA season. And that will give them a better idea of what they want to offer
in Miami
this summer. And it is a little harder in Miami with the body fat rules and everything else that they've got going. So I think for them, it was a smart pickup. There was a lot of conversation going into this of why would Miami give up anything when they can probably get him without giving up assets this summer. But you do see with how little, frankly, they had to give up. It is worthwhile for them because they get him for the rest of the season. They get him for the playoff run, and they are going to now get a little bit more information about him as well. I do want to get to the other side and the Harden angle, though, because after all is said and done, this is what the Rockets netted from James Harden. 4 first-round picks, right? That's good. 5 pick swaps. Avery Bradley, Kelly Olynyk, Dante Exum. I'm going to stop there.
Yes.
And Richard, we don't know who those picks will become. And also, you have to remember, this is kind of restoring picks to Houston. It's not a bunch of extra picks the way Oklahoma City now seems to control the draft until the end of time. Houston gave away so much to Oklahoma City just to get Russell Westbrook. This now kind of puts them back in the positive side of the ledger with a little bit more in terms of picks and first rounders and things like that. Will Houston end up regretting how they handled the Harden trade?
In the short term, the answer is yes, without a doubt. When you look at could you have gotten there was rumors you could get Ben Simmons on your team, but they wanted somebody else. And so I don't know exactly what was offered, but I will say in the short term, this doesn't look good. I had an NBA coach tell me that, you know what picks and pick swaps and potential do? They get you fired, right? Because a lot of time coaches aren't around to see these 4 first round picks or 5 pick swaps, and they're not around to develop the talent for 4 years. And you got to hope that one of those teams has an off year, and all of a sudden they're a top 5 and top 10 pick like the Brooklyn Nets were, and that's how Boston had all of these picks because the Brooklyn Nets were in a bad spot. So maybe in 5 years it might be okay, but today it is looking really bad.
It's real bad. And down here in Texas, the Houston Rockets fans, they are pissed off. Mm-hmm. And here's why. Ever since Tillman Fertitta took over the team, it's been a downward slope. It's been going downhill. And he needs to learn how to be an owner. He needs to call Mark Cuban and learn how to be an NBA owner, right? Learn how to put people in position and let them do their jobs. To me, he's too involved. He won't say so on every single thing that's going on when really he don't really know, and it's okay. Sit back on the sideline, cross your legs, invite some of your friends, drink a little Ciroc here and there, a Lobo tequila. Chill out. It's cool. But at the end of the day, he has to learn how to be an owner. Right now, they dropped the ball tremendously because there's no reason that Caris LeVert or Ben Simmons should not be in a Rockets uniform.
Well, look, only Tillman Fertitta knows how much money was a factor in all of these moves. Obviously, draft picks don't draw a salary, and even once they turn into actual people, they are on rookie contracts. So I don't know if not wanting to pay a guy like Ben Simmons or a guy like Caris LeVert or even a guy like Jared Allen was part of the equation here. In terms of, gee, we've got a bunch of draft picks, I will always say, yeah, you can draft guys and hope they maybe turn into someone like Ben Simmons. I always said that when the Chicago Bulls were talking about, you know, trading away Jimmy Butler. Maybe if you get some picks back, you could maybe possibly in 5 years develop someone who could become Jimmy Butler. Guess what? You could just have Jimmy Butler. So I am always a little bit curious when teams go the other route, unless it's like the Thunder, where you are just getting so many at-bats at the plate, you know you are going to end up developing really good talent down the road. But again, it might have been what this team needed at this time. And as you say, RJ, we'll check back with them in what will now be 4 or 5 years to see how those picks went and how things turned out. All right, coming up, very excited to bring in NBA vet Iman Shumpert, a former teammate of both of yours, because I want some help. No. I need help. Kirk and Richard.
He's not going to
And some
contribute.
Advice about what it's like to manage both of these Ooh. NBA champions. Stick with us. Our next guest, an NBA vet who had a little 10-day with the Nets just recently, but has also had stops with the Knicks, Cavs, Kings, and Rockets, and was, of course, part of that 2016 Cavaliers team that historically came back from down 3-1, the greatest finals comeback in NBA history. Iman Shumpert, welcome back to The Jump. Always so lovely to have you, but particularly on today when I have to deal with these two and you at least have experience.
You're going to need me, Rich. You're going to need me for these guys.
You can help me out. Exactly. I mentioned the Nets. Obviously, being in the middle of that, I'm sure was an experience because that is one of the most high-profile teams in the league this season. What else have you been up to, and how was that? Give us a little recap here.
Well, the stint with them was actually short-lived. I think it was more so around the time they just were signing guys. And, you know, me just being a veteran guy that's been around, I think it was easy for communication, easy for me to be a part of just the locker room, if just that, just to add on something to the team. Mm-hmm. Being a guy that's been there before, it helps young guys feel, you know, just a breath of fresh air to be around it, to cater to the ups and downs, so to speak. And, you know, it was short-lived because I didn't get a chance to get out there. I ended up pulling my hamstring after we stayed in the hotel for a week quarantine and didn't get to get in the gym, pulled my hamstring, had to nurse that. And, you know, it was a tough break. But hopefully, you know, going up into more competitive games, somebody needs me to ever give me a call.
So, yeah, I knew that was one thing I was going to bring up, is that you didn't really get an opportunity to contribute. That's one of the things that people don't understand about the COVID situation. You get an athlete that gets an opportunity, but he has to sit in a room for a week and not be able to work out. Then you get 10 days and you pull your hamstring. That's not a surprise. But are you 100% healthy, one? And two, what do you think now that the trade deadline and people are calling you to tell you that you're on the jump, now that people know, now that
exactly.
I know exactly what's going on. Yo, man, I just saw you on the jump. But now you're 100% healthy. Now that the trade deadline is gone and teams are starting to fill out their playoff rosters, like, what is it that you, I know what you bring, but tell the people out there what you bring to a playoff roster for a team looking for that final push.
Just knowledge of the game, man. I think in this league, experience just goes a long way. We don't talk about it enough, seeing that the game has now changed to more of a skilled game and a focus on your superstar handling, where you could keep young guys around that could just, you know, make a shot and, you know, do athletic things when you need them. I think the game made that turn, but when you're talking about the playoffs and playing a certain team four times or beating a certain team four times, you start paying attention to small details. And I feel like all those small details and tangibles are the things that really put me on Front Street, doing those little things nobody else wants to do, making something out of nothing. My brother always constantly talked to me about that growing up. You make something out of nothing, you always got a spot on the team. And he was like, you constantly make that play, you're going to be okay playing basketball. And, sometimes that's my favorite play, mastering the broken play. Everything goes wrong, we get a steal, push the momentum in the other direction. So I'm just gonna continue to work on my stuff, stay in shape, like you said, Richard, stay healthy, and hopefully I get that call.
Hey, Sean, listen, I feel like this. I'm with you on 100%. I love, like, I'm always lobbying for vets like yourself, Jamal Crawford, Isaiah Thomas, to be on rosters, right? Because here it is. I think the roster now is like 17 guys, and everyone is not happy, right? And you have a lot of young guys on these rosters who are not getting playing time, not or not in the rotation, whatever the case may be. And I think that you need vets like yourself on that bench to monitor, to mentor these young guys and help them along the way to make sure that they stay focused. But past all that, I want to know if you could pick a team, and you watch a lot of basketball, you see all the contenders out there, which team, Bell, you looking at that you could possibly go and help right now or in the near future for us this season to help them go win the title?
I think it's a couple teams.
You don't have to say anything because we don't want you to eliminate any opportunities. But like,
I got something
for you, Shump. So we're Kendrick makes such a good point, and one of your former teammates was in this situation. Carmelo was out of the league for basically a year, right? And then came back and showed exactly what he brings to the table. So you have seen that before. And Carmelo's name was in the news just this week again with you and Phil Jackson giving a pretty extensive interview about his time with the Knicks. And he talked about Carmelo and he said, I think he wanted to be a leader, but he didn't fully know how to be. And as someone who was in that locker room, I was wondering what you thought about that.
I think that Melo is his own version of a leader. I think we get so caught up in how this leader does it, how that leader does it. And it's kind of why we can't compare certain players when we want to look for the greatest player ever. You can't compare them because of their leadership role and how they attacked it. It's more so your opinion of how they did it. But I'm sure anybody that's in a locker room with somebody that's being mentioned as the greatest, they'll definitely have a majority's vote. Like, nah, I was next to the guy. I would love to go to war with him. Mm-hmm. Melo was one of those guys that I've never felt so safe as far as, like, I didn't start off this way, but as the games went on, I started realizing this dude will really take the blame for everything. Like, there was times that I'm like, why you don't just say what happened like that? You know what I mean? Just say what happened.
Like, he's taking all the bullets for everyone else.
Yeah. I'm like, why are you taking the bullets, bro? Just say it. Maybe they'll play harder. Like, what are you talking about, bro? Mm-hmm. You just gave me everything you got tonight. Like, I'm going to be fair with him. You know what I'm saying? He knows I'm going to be fair. I got a lot of mouth. I'm going to say what I got to say. So, you know what I'm saying? I'm going to say what I got to say. So it's like, if I'm yelling at him, I'm like, bro, why don't you just say it? And he would just, that's not on me to do that to that man. You know what I'm saying? He always thought about, am I taking food out of somebody's mouth by saying that? You know what I'm saying? Do we got kids? I don't know. I don't want to fill his mind with that. I know I can take everything, harbor it, and I can make stuff happen. So I'm going to continue to do that. And when me and him had that understanding, that's what made me and his relationship. That's why my respect for Melo as a player came. Because I used to be the guy that was always over his shoulder like, man, you got to get a ring or else they going to talk about you like this. And he would always tell me that's not his focus. His focus is on playing the game the right way, bring it to a team, and if he get it, he get it. But he can't live in his career thinking that way. And I always respected it after the fact, just getting older. You know what I'm saying? I was talking to him when I was 22 years old. Being 30, I can understand, you know, what bald people say more. You know, like my man over here.
That's funny. That's funny. I'm sitting here between two hairy milk duds, and you guys want to crack jokes about me being bald.
Shep, real quick, give me one either Perk or RJ story from your time playing with him. You pick. Go ahead as we come out to break here. One quick story as we go to break here about either Richard or Perk. You pick, since you played with both of them.
I remember Perk, he wasn't playing, and somebody got hit. I can't remember who got hit. Somebody got hit in the game, and Perk immediately got up and begged to get subbed into the game. I can't remember. I want to say it was in Boston.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
See? Let me go club somebody.
He wanted to check himself in. Just to be on the court. So he was like, I'll put it in.
It was Jay Crowder, producer Danny says.
Whatever these shots, I'll put it into everything. Just get me out there. And it was the coolest thing to see. Just because it was like, that's a team to me. Like, that was always the version of a team I wanted to be on. So that was cool. It felt cool to have Big Brother on the sideline.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Appreciate it. Not about you at all. Appreciate it, son.
We both teased both of these guys, but as you and I both know, they are the best teammates to have. Thank you so much for stopping by. We really appreciate it. I know we will see you back in the league, and we will see all of y'all watching back after this commercial. We'll be right back with you.
I'll be working.
Crunch time here on The Jump. A reporter asked second-year Clippers guard Terrence Mann about his team acquiring Rajon Rondo. And this is amazing. He just took out of his wallet in the moment a Rondo rookie card that he has been carrying there since the seventh grade. 16 years. Reached into his wallet, pulled up the BF card. It's the coolest thing I saw last night. Hasn't he been paying attention to what's going on in the markets out there?
These cards, you can't just keep them there.
Richard. Like,
what?
I thought this was so lovely.
Yeah, RJ, man, this is so dope. Don't mess up the moment, bro. Like, he don't care about all that. That probably was his favorite player.
Awesome.
Rondo was his favorite player. Now he's on the Clippers. He can share the locker room with him. Like, let that man have his moment.
It's a nice reminder for the rest of us to know that you guys are as big fans of the game, even in the moment, as we are, and that there are always players that you are going to be starstruck to meet at every stage of your career. So Terrence, obviously a younger player, starstruck about Rondo, but you guys, I'm sure, got starstruck by a couple guys, right, in your time, even though you were a real NBA player yourself?
David Robinson. Mine was Kevin Garnett. Yeah. So David Robinson played against him in the NBA Finals when it was all over.
Right.
All over. I'm sitting on there, and I knew it was his last game. I looked over, and I was like, nah, I can tell you were my favorite player growing up. Yeah. We all get stuck like that, man.
Aww.